Hi, I'm Steve, and this is my story. So I was born in Venezuela. We moved here in 88 and grew up in a traditional family. Going to church as a kid, I just didn't really connect. Got to a point where my parents allowed me to stay home, and I jumped on the opportunity. My parents love me, I know that, and they provided for us. But you know, being from a third world country is a different mentality. My parents came here to give us opportunity that they didn't have, and so they were hard on us to the extent of just making sure that we took advantage of the opportunities that were presented. And so my relationship with my father was a little bit hard dealing with when I was an early teenager, because I know that he loved me, but there was always an element that I was never good enough, or I could always do better. So through my teenage years, I really didn't have someone kind of walking me through the ropes of what it means to be a man. And so at 16, I really started to rebel. And at 16 is when I started drinking, and I lost my virginity at 16. And that's kind of when I just took over and just did my own thing. And at 19, I just got to a point where I really questioned if this was all life was about. I ended up getting involved in a multi-level marketing company. And at their quarterly seminars, they actually said, you know, whatever Sunday service you go to, go to that. So I went to their service and heard a message that was like, God loves you and God's pursuing you. But the one thing at the end of that, the guy said to find a church that believes the gospel and preaches the gospel. And so I just remember very clearly searching for churches for that. And I went to a lot, and I finally walked into one church after a buddy recommended it to me. I just felt at peace, and I felt at home. And I just started to commit to going there. So at 20 years old, I had a conversation with God, and I gave my life over to Him. I could see a change in my life, so much so that my family thought I was like in a cult. And I just remember at 21 just not going to the bar. That's how much I just didn't want that lifestyle anymore. And so, but I made the mistake of taking a job opportunity away from a church family. And so at 22, I quickly reverted back to my old ways. And it wasn't until I was 25 that I actually got to pause and encounter God again and just engage Him in the conversation. I was out in Arizona with a girl I was dating at the time, and Sunday she just said, we're going to church, and I said, okay. And I just remember picking up Chris Tomlin's CD on the way home, and there's just a line in one of the songs when he says, you see the depths of my heart and you love me the same, that just broke me. I just remember just asking Him a ton of questions, and just really just wrestling. And I just remember if you're gonna take my life, I'm going to give this to you. You're going to answer all my questions. And He did. He didn't answer them all at the same time, but He gave me enough to keep coming back. And that's a lot of questions. And I read a lot. Studied my Bible. I remember Isaiah saying, come to me and, you know, we'll reason. Just really engaging God in really tough questions and just really wrestling it out. And so He answered my questions, and I just said, okay, like, I can't I can't turn away from you. Like, I may slip and fall, but I'm yours, you know?
Awesome. Well, welcome. For those of you who are with us for the first time, or those of you who are listening online, my name is Chris High. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And today we have so many different things to celebrate, and I'm not sure if I still have wet spots all over my shirt. I didn't spill coffee on myself, just to let you know. We've had baptisms all day, and so... I love, as we work through Sundays where there's baptisms, and I'm basically covered in water most of the day. It's an incredible day for me, and we've been celebrating all morning. I think that at this point we've had 10 individuals who have taken the step of baptism already in our services throughout the different locations, which is amazing. And then also today we're wrapping up this conversation called His Church. And if you haven't been with us for the past few weeks, we don't often say this, but I want to tell you, if you haven't been with us, you need to go back and listen to these conversations for the past 5 weeks. And usually I'll say you can, or you can check it out online at hobokengrace.com, but I'm telling you, if you haven't been with us, I highly, highly recommend that you go back and listen to these conversations, because it has been an awesome journey over the past few weeks as we're walking through just the beauty of what this thing called church was intended to be. And we've been looking at it from two sides, both the beauty of what it was intended to be, but then also how it can go so wrong and how it can become painful and destructive, and how it becomes what many of you left at some point in your life. And for a lot of us, we have painful experiences in our background when it comes to church, whether directly or indirectly. This thing that was intended to be so beautiful can become really, really destructive. And so we've been looking at how we can go back to the beginning and call ourselves back to what we were supposed to be, what was intended to be. And it's been awesome. It's been awesome for me personally just to once again walk through it myself and call myself back to it. I think it's been great for a lot of us just to remind ourselves again of what the mission is and how we live this out. And then for some of you, for the very first time, you're coming in contact with this idea of the beauty of what it was supposed to be. And I'm really excited about what God's been doing and what God's been teaching us and how God's leading us forward in this. But as we come to today, not only are we celebrating the final talk in this conversation, but then also I want to take a second to be able to address something that I'm a little bit nervous of. And as we come to this point in the conversation, I'm a little afraid of something. Because one of my fears is that as we talk through this and we talk through what it was supposed to be and we talk through all the things that can kind of take it in the wrong direction, one of my great fears is that we'll come to today and as we've learned what we've learned and as we've seen what we've seen, one of my great fears is that we'll come today and we'll think to ourselves, okay, now we can move forward without any pain, without any hurt, without any destruction. One of my great fears is that because of what we've learned or because of what we've seen, we can begin to buy into the idea that, okay, now we can be the perfect church. We can be exactly what God's called us to be. We can finally have a church where there won't be pain, where there won't be hurts, where there won't be conflict. And I think even more so, I'm afraid that we'll come to today and believe that that's the ideal and that's what we're looking forward to, or that's what we're working for, because that's what's going to help us to accomplish the mission. And as we've talked through these different things, the mission and how we understand the mission and how we carry out this mission and how oftentimes these things get distorted and lead to destructive things, my fear is that we'll think that because we don't fall into these traps, that now we can have a church where finally there won't be conflict, where finally we'll be able to create like this utopian society, and it's just going to be great all the time. And I think even more than that, I'm afraid that we'll buy into the idea That's the goal. And that if we could just find that, then we would finally be able to ultimately accomplish the mission. It's my fear because I grew up in churches that believed that. And it's my fear because when you go back to the beginning and you look at the book that we've been studying through, this book of Acts, I think you see that the writer is not necessarily calling us to this utopian society, but rather is calling us to something different. And my fear is that we'll miss it. You see, I think it can be really easy when you talk about pain and destruction inside the church, and we talk about how we're going to try to avoid these different pitfalls. I think it can be really easy to subconsciously receive this message that in some way, shape, or form, the power of our witness is found in our perfection. That the power in our ability to be able to carry out this mission that we've been given, and if you go back to week one, you remember the mission that we have is that we are to be witnesses, that we're to take Christ to the world, that we're to demonstrate and show and communicate Christ to the world around us, literally everyone on this planet. That is our mission. And one of my great fears is that because we're talking about how we can avoid these pitfalls, that we'll begin to believe that the power in our witness and that what is going to make us effective in our witness is perfection. And I think that's a very dangerous thing to think. Now, I grew up in churches that believed that the power of their witness was their perfection. And several of the churches that I grew up in, they believed that if they could just get it right, if they could just finally get to the point where there wasn't any pain, where they could finally get to the point where there wasn't any conflict, where they could finally get to the point where everyone was perfectly in sync with one another, if they could finally get to that point, then they could accomplish the mission of demonstrating Christ to the world around them. Then they'd be able to reach the world around them. And many of you have heard my story. Maybe you heard it at the beginning of this series. You know, for much of my life, I grew up really hating church. And one of the reasons I hated church is because I bought into this idea that the power of our witness is found in our perfection. And I looked at the church and I said, it's nowhere near what it needs to be or what it has to be in order to be effective. Because every time I came in contact with it, I realized just over and over again just how flawed it was. And I believed that, man, if we could just get it to be perfect, then it would be effective. But it was nowhere near perfect. And it seemed that no matter how hard the leadership tried, no matter how hard people tried, there was still pain. And there was still conflict, and there was still brokenness. We were working and working and working to try to change that. But under it all, there was this lie that if we could just get it right, if we could just have the perfect church, then we would be effective. That lie leads to all sorts of really, really bad things inside of churches. Because when you begin to believe this idea that the power of our witness is found in our perfection, or the effectiveness of our witness is found in our perfection, then all of a sudden it becomes very much all about the rules. All of a sudden, it becomes about making sure that we get it right. All of a sudden, it becomes making sure that you live right and I live right and that everybody lives right. And we got to make sure that we get it right. Because if we don't get it right, we're not going to be effective. And so it becomes all about the rules. And all of a sudden, everyone's judging one another and everyone's trying to figure out, okay, are you living up to the standard or are you not living up to the standard? Well, the problem is no one can live up to the standard. problem is we're really, really bad at keeping the rules, which leads to probably one of the most destructive things inside of churches who believe that the power is found in their perfection. And that is that rather than being open and honest about our brokenness, rather than being open and honest about the fact that we're not perfect, we get really good at hiding. We get really good at covering up. And we begin to spend huge chunks of our lives trying to make sure that the people around us don't find out who we actually are. And not just as individuals, but then also as churches. And so I watched this growing up, whereas churches, rather than embracing and realizing the fact that, no, we're not perfect, no, we don't have it all together, we try to do things to be able to hide that from the community around us. Because if the community actually found out that we weren't perfect, if the community actually found out that we were broken and that we had all these flaws, then we would lose our effectiveness. Because we believed that the power and effectiveness of our witness was found in our perfection. In our culture, the reality of church cover-ups is not something that's distant from us. Something that we're very much aware of. And at the heart of it is this lie. This lie that I'm terrified that we'll latch onto in this series. This lie that our effectiveness is found in our perfection. I watched the churches that I was a part of believe this as a child, and so therefore I began to believe it not just about church, but I believed it about myself and my own witness and my own ability to be able to bring Christ to the world around me. And I began to believe that the effectiveness of my ability to be able to share Christ with the world around me was based on my perfection. Many of you believe this as well. I know, because when I talk to you about sharing your faith, you begin to talk to me about your failures and why they disqualify you. Because you believe somewhere down there that if you would finally get it together, then you could be effective. There's this little lie that I believe Satan loves to use. That the power of our witness, the effectiveness of our witness, is found in our perfection. I don't think it could be further from the truth when you actually look at what the scriptures say, both from an individual standpoint and then also from a church standpoint. Because when we go back to the beginning and we begin to look at how this thing plays out, from the very beginning, at no point in the story, whether we're talking about the book of Acts or whether we're talking about the rest of the New Testament, which is telling the story of the church and letters to the churches, at no point in the story do we find a perfect church. We find churches who are accomplishing and effective in the mission in amazing, amazing ways. But at no point in the journey do we ever, ever find a perfect church. As a matter of fact, if anything, we find churches that are really, really screwed up, that are really, really broken. Even from the beginning, when you look at the book of Acts, you don't find a church that doesn't have conflict, but rather you find a church where conflict is happening all the time. As a matter of fact, conflict is almost woven in from the very beginning because of the fact that there's this back and forth between Judaism and Christianity, and what is this going to look like, and what do we take from what came before, and what do we leave behind, and there's all this conflict. You go back a couple weeks ago, we talked about Peter and Cornelius, and Peter goes to Cornelius' house, who's a Roman army officer and he eats with him. Now, inside of Judaism, he's not supposed to do that. So when he comes back to the church criticizes him and they begin to chastise him about what he's done. And there's all this conflict. As you continue to move forward, Acts chapter 15, just continuing on as we've been studying through this book, as you get to Acts chapter 15, you see another example of conflict. It has something to do with this very same thing. It says, while Paul and Barnabas were at Antioch of Syria, some men from Judea arrived and began to teach the believers, unless you are circumcised as required by the law of Moses, you cannot be saved. Paul and Barnabas disagreed with them, arguing vehemently. Finally, the church decided to send Paul and Barnabas to Jerusalem, accompanied by some local believers, to talk to the apostles and elders about this question. The church sent the delegates to Jerusalem, and they stopped along the way, and it begins to tell about how this conflict is worked out. But inside the story, you see, again, conflict begins to come up inside the church, and there are these believers who are like, okay, Gentiles can become believers, and they can be part of the church, but you have to be circumcised. And so Paul and Barnabas start to argue with them about it. If there's anything worth arguing about, it's this. Okay? Right? Men, show of hands, right? Definitely worth arguing about. And they're like, no, this isn't part of it. That's part of the old system. This is about something new that God's doing. It's about grace. But there's conflict. Even when you get outside of the book of Acts, Paul is writing about this in his relationship with Peter in the book of Galatians. And listen to what he says. Listen to how he describes what happens. Galatians chapter 2, it says, but when Peter came to Antioch, I had to oppose him to his face, for what he did was very wrong. When he first arrived, he ate with the Gentile Christians who were not circumcised. But afterwards, when some friends of James came, Peter wouldn't eat with the Gentiles anymore. He was afraid of criticism from the people who insisted on the necessity of circumcision. And you see this playing out, not just in the church in general, but then between Peter and Paul. And Paul's having to go to Peter and say, listen, what you're doing is wrong. From the very beginning, we never, ever see a picture of a perfect church. From the very beginning, there's still brokenness. From the very beginning, there's still conflict. From the very beginning, there's still pain and disappointment. If anything, it seems that in the book of Acts, as Luke is telling us this story, and as you read through the New Testament, if anything, it seems that God is trying to help us understand over and over and over and over again that the goal of this and that what we're working toward is not that you will one day be perfect, because that is not a reality. Most of the New Testament is written by church planters who are writing back to churches that they've planted because they're in literally a disaster state. You look at the church in Acts, you see conflict. When you look at the church in Corinth is, when Paul writes to the church of Corinth, there's some crazy things happening inside that church. An individual is sleeping with his mother-in-law, everybody knows about it, and the church is actually proud of the fact that they're not confronting this. And they're confused, and they don't have this figured out, and there's all this brokenness, and there's this thing playing out inside the church. But the interesting thing about God is that God doesn't hide these stories from us. He actually brings them to us on purpose. He's like, I want you to know about this church. Now, the church in Corinth was accomplishing the mission in really, really cool and amazing ways. In the book of Acts, the church is accomplishing the mission in amazing ways. But God, rather than hiding the brokenness of the church from us, He intentionally makes sure that we know about it. And I used to look at that and think to myself, that's just further proof that the church is never gonna be able to be what it was supposed to be. It couldn't even be that from the beginning. Further proof that it's not going to be able to do what it's supposed to do. Because I thought that the power and effectiveness was found in perfection. But then God began to do something in my life personally that changed the way I viewed all of this. And growing up, I thought I needed to make sure that I was perfect. I needed to make sure that I followed all the rules because then I'd be able to share Christ with the world around me. But then God began to do something, and there's not one doubt in my mind that he did it on purpose. He began to put me in situations where over and over and over again I failed. But here's the thing. They weren't just situations where I failed. They were situations in which I failed and I could no longer hide it. Because I'd gotten really good at hiding. I had never gotten good at being perfect. And you never will either. But I'd gotten really good at hiding. Finally, God began to move in my life and say, no more. And I'm convinced to this day that he put me in situations where not only would I fail, but I'd fail in a way where everyone would know. And I thought when that happened, I thought that I'd lost my ability to bring Christ to the world around me. Because I believed that the power of my witness would be my perfection. But what happened was quite the opposite. Because all of a sudden I began to have real conversations with people. About what it really meant to be forgiven. I began to have real conversations with people about a God who's not afraid of our brokenness, but a God who steps into our brokenness. I began to have conversations with people who, for most of my life, kept me at an arm's length. And all of a sudden, they began to share with me their brokenness as well. And I began to share with them this unbelievable grace that I'd experienced and that I continued to experience. This unbelievable love and this God who is not looking for perfect people. You see, when we believe that our witness is based on our perfection, whether as individuals, as a church, this is what we say to the world. If you can get it together, God will accept you too. That's not the message of Jesus. That's not sharing Christ with the world. And all of a sudden, when I could no longer hide my brokenness, all of a sudden, I found myself in situations where I was actually able to communicate Christ to the world around me. And I began to realize something that I think the writers of the New Testament are crying out for us to realize. And that is this: the power of our witness is not found in our perfection. The power of our witness is found in our ability to be able to experience and demonstrate his love and grace and forgiveness in the midst of brokenness. You see, I used to think that I could communicate Christ so well if I was just perfect, but you know what? It's almost impossible to communicate the forgiveness, love, and grace of Christ in a situation where you experience perfection. The power and the beauty of our witness, the effectiveness of our witness, is not found in perfection. It's found in something quite different. The couple of years ago, I was studying through the book of Romans, and there's this intriguing passage in the middle of Romans. And through the book, the writer is trying to help us understand God's grace and just how far he's gone to love us and the way that he's brought us back to him and just the fullness of how Jesus has done everything for you. And it's not about what you can do for him, but it's about how he's done this for you and then how you just respond to that and live your life in light of that. And he's walking through this and he says this intriguing thing in the middle of the book. He says, the truth is that when you sin, that God's grace abounds. And the more you sin, the more God's grace abounds. He's talking about the beauty of the freedom that Christ has called us into, that we no longer have to live in this way where we're trying to in some way, shape, or form prove ourselves to him, but that now because of Jesus Christ, he's literally paid for all of it, and there's nothing that will ever keep us from him. So he says, even when you sin, God's grace abounds. It's actually an opportunity for that to happen. He's trying to teach us that in our mistakes and our failures and our brokenness, we can actually find God in a really beautiful way rather than allowing it to drive us away from him. But I remember reading that passage, and I had looked at it for a long time in terms of my relationship with God and just how his grace abounds in my life. And in those moments, I learned how to be able to walk out of a moment of failure, and rather than running from God because I was afraid of him, going to him and experiencing his grace abounding in my life. But for the first time, I saw the passage in a different way. And I began to ask myself, what if our brokenness is not just the chance for God's grace to abound in our lives, but what if our brokenness is actually the chance, is actually the opportunity for us to be able to demonstrate grace to each other as well? What if our brokenness is not what keeps us from sharing Christ? But what if our brokenness is actually the very opportunity to accurately share Christ? What if the mission is not about how we can eliminate our brokenness from inside the church, but what if the mission is to be able to interact with one another's brokenness in a way in which it demonstrates Christ over and over and over again? What if the most effective witness is not perfection, but the most effective witness is when we actually look forward to being able to forgive? We actually look forward to being able to struggle through something with someone else. What if it was actually the brokenness of the early church that allowed them to best communicate that Christ loves broken people? Sometimes I'll have dinner group leaders come to me, and for those of you who don't know, dinner groups are just small groups inside of our church of 8 to 10 people who get together, have dinner together, and talk through our conversations for Sunday. Try to not just be hearers of God's word, but doers of God's word. It's one of the most beautiful things about our family, where people can know you and you can know them, and you're building these relationships and journeying together. But undoubtedly, if you spend enough time with people, there's going to be problems. Because we're not perfect. And so dinner group leaders will come to me and they'll say to me, "Oh, Chris, there's this thing happening in our group and they're all stressed out and they're really worried and this person's upset at this person and, you know, like they didn't pet their dog when they walked in and they're upset and they're angry and there's this thing happening inside the groups." And obviously that's never been a case at all, but you understand what I'm talking about. And you're like, how do we resolve this? How do I fix this? How do I get this to go away? This is terrible. This is the worst thing that could happen to our group. And I'll say to them, awesome. They're like, no. And they'll start to explain the situation to me like I didn't hear them the first time. They're like, no, you don't get it. It's really bad. And this person really is upset. And this person's really hurt. And I'll say, no, this is good. I say, this isn't good. I say, yes, it is. Because now is when we get to find out whether we actually believe in forgiveness. Now is when we get to actually find out whether or not we value demonstrating God's grace in one another's lives. You can't do that if no one's hurt. You can't do that if there's no conflict. What if the power and the effectiveness of our witness is found in something very different than what we thought? What if we began to look at our brokenness in a different way? Not as something that keeps us from being who Christ called us to be, but as our very opportunity to be who Christ called us to be. I think this is one of the reasons why not only in Matthew, but then also at another point in the New Testament, we're taught on how to be able to work through these situations. And Jesus, in Matthew chapter 18, is trying to help us to understand that for us, it's going to be different than it is with other people. And so he begins to talk to his disciples about what it means to actually demonstrate him and to begin to engage in one another's brokenness rather than just running from it. And so in Matthew chapter 18, he's talking to them. He says, if another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. If the other person listens and confesses it, you have won that other person back. And Jesus says, listen, guys, this is what's going to happen with you. It's going to be different than it is with the rest of the culture. And a couple weeks ago, we talked about living questionable lives, right? That we're not just one of the culture, but that we're constantly working to live lives that cause people to ask us why, and lives that in some way, shape, or form are countercultural. And this is one of those things, because inside of our culture, if you hurt me, one of two things is going to happen. Either number one, I'm going to hurt you back and make sure that you pay for it. Or number two, I want nothing to do with you anymore. I'm leaving you behind. But Jesus says, no. It's not going to be that way with you. With you, you're not just going to leave them. You're going to care enough about them to go to them. And make no mistake about it. This is all about caring for that person. Because what does he say is the goal? That you bring them back, that you restore them. He says, listen, with you, it's going to be different. You're not just going to leave them. You're not going to try to hurt them. He says, no, you're going to go to them. You're going to care enough about them to step into it with them. You see, Jesus isn't creating a perfect community. He's creating a community of mutual transformation, a community in which I understand that I need you to help me move forward. I need you to walk through it with me. I need you to be able to step into my life when I'm moving towards things that are going to destroy me and towards things that are going to hurt me and hurt the lives of the people around you. I need you to step into my life. And you need me to do the same. And so he says, you don't ignore it. And sometimes I think when we ignore it in the lives of those around us, we think that we care about them. If your friend is doing something that's going to destroy them and you ignore it, don't lie to yourself and think that you care about them. Jesus says, no, you don't ignore it. You step into it. Because we need each other. And you need someone who will walk through it with you. And I know that that's difficult. I know for a lot of us, myself included, right? Like, I have a really hard time acknowledging the fact that I need anything or anyone. And so it's difficult for us. And so whenever I encounter something that's difficult like this, I like to be able to pass it off to you so you can feel tension and uncomfortable as well. And so here's what I want you to do. I'm going to count down from three in just a little bit. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to turn to the next person, the person who's sitting next to you or around you here, and I want you to say to them, I need you to walk through it with me. You're like, I don't know the person who's sitting next to me. That's even better, because it doesn't matter whether you know them. As we're on this journey together, for every person who's in this room, you need them. And I know some of you are sitting next to your spouse, and so you're like, oh, this will be easy. I'll just turn to my spouse. Your spouse already knows that you need them, all right? They experience it every day of their lives. They don't need you to tell them again. So I want you to turn to someone else, all right? I need you to walk through it with me. Ready? 3, 2, 1, go. You only have to say it once. I think some of you said it to like 6, 7 people. They get the point. Some of you are like, no. You see, what Jesus is doing as he launches this thing called the church, and make sure that you get this, because if you don't, you will live your entire lives frustrated with the church. He's not trying to launch a perfect community. He's launching a community of mutual transformation, in which we no longer look at each other's brokenness as obstacles to our witness, but we look at each other's brokenness as opportunities to witness, as opportunities to actually display who Jesus Christ is. That we care enough to not ignore it, to not walk away from it, but to step into it. His church is not perfect. His church doesn't believe that perfection is the power or the effectiveness behind their witness. His church is all about forgiveness and grace. And his church takes every opportunity that presents itself to demonstrate that in any way that they can. And I know for some of you, you're here for the very first time. And when I had you say that to the person next to you, you're like, I'm never coming back. This is weird. But here's what I think. I don't think it matters where you are on this journey. I think every single one of us, every single one of us want someone who will walk through it with us. And for most of us, the reason that we hide our brokenness is because we don't think someone else will care enough to do that. Jesus launched this mission for us to be that in each other's lives. That person that you're hesitating to have the conversation with, you know what they're probably thinking? I wish someone cared enough. I just wish someone cared enough to walk through this with me. That's who we are. That's what we do. And it's in that that we get to show the world who Jesus Christ really is. Will you pray with me? Father, You are an amazing God. And you've called us into this thing that is so beautiful and yet so different than how we think it would or should work, and you keep trying to help us understand that our natural inclinations of how it should work and what it should look like are nothing like yours. Because you truly are love. Father, I pray that you would continue to challenge us as a church to be your church. Not to take ourselves seriously, but to take you seriously. To understand, as we saw with Peter very early on in this series, to understand that we don't have the answers, that we couldn't come up with them if we tried, but to simply decide to follow you, that we will, without hesitation, without question, follow you, because you are the one who's brought us back to life. You are the one who's taught us what it means to forgive. You are the one who introduced us to the very concept of grace. Father, may we be a group of people who understand our brokenness, who do not run from it or hide it. May we be a group of people who engage it, not individually, not alone, but engage it together. And in doing so, may we demonstrate how you've done that for us. In Jesus' name, amen.